You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Our flag is proudly floating on the land and on the sea. Shout, shout, the battle cry of freedom. Beneath it all we conquered and will conquer all the day. Shout, shout, the battle cry of freedom.
Our AC forever, she's never at a loss. Down with the eagle and up with the cross. She will rally round the bonnie flag, you'll rally once again.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, with that, welcome. Confederate History Month 2024 is accelerating to full throttle tonight with three fantastic guests on deck. We had three last week with Michael Hill, John Hill, and Kirk Lyons. Tonight, you're going to hear from Gene Andrews once again and Brad Griffin. But first, Patrick Martin joins us this Saturday evening, April the 20th. Only one more week left in Confederate History Month. It's going by fast. Before we say hello to Patrick, let's welcome Keith Alexander back. Keith has missed the last 2 weeks, at least not been in the studio the last 2 weeks, as he's recovered from a hip replacement, just getting that oil changed, right, Keith?
That's it. I'm telling you, it was of any segment we have all year long that I would hate to miss, it's a Confederate History Month because, you know, I'm a Confederate. My great-grandfather was in Forrest Cavalry, the 15th Tennessee. And there's, you know, I like to mention his name every chance I can. Independence, Ellen Shuler Alexander.
All right. Keith's been out for 2 weeks, so if he gets to silence that cell phone, not unprecedented, but in any event, he's a popular guy. He gets a lot of calls. Let's go now to our featured guest for the first hour, Patrick Martin. He is the co-editor, of course, and one of the 12 contributing authors to The Honorable Cause of Free South. We made mention of that last week during Michael Hill's segment. We're going to mention it again in just a little bit, although in a slightly different way. And he's back with us tonight as we continue to celebrate Confederate history. Patrick, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you very much, James. And Keith, I'm glad that you're with your new hip. You'll be able to do a hula hoop here soon.
Or at least a hula dance.
Good to hear from you, gentlemen, again.
Patrick, we're going to get into some Southern-related themes here, of course, with you. But, you know, first, I want to remind everybody what an interesting professional background you've had. And you've talked about it before. You've written about it. But I don't want to ask you to reveal too much. But you have a lot of history abroad, professional history abroad, including the Middle East. And so you're looking at the current escalation that we've seen over the course of just the last week between Israel and Iran. Obviously, the situation between Russia and Ukraine is still ongoing. China and Taiwan seems to be getting a little more hot. Do you see this whole current unipolar American hegemon being tenable or untenable throughout the indefinite and never-ending future?
It's definitely untenable. There's no question about it. This is falling apart very fast, probably a lot faster than Washington, D.C. expected it would. For those of you who are not familiar, I mean, I've worked in more than 75 countries. I still work very closely with our number of international partners. In fact, one of my more recent projects involves a number of colleagues from different countries in Europe, specifically Italy, France, and Ireland, with similar political backgrounds and desires that we have as a group. But I'm seeing this as it's falling apart. So right now the big key has been the U.S. dollar and how strong it is relative to other currencies. There's really been no competitor. That looks like it's about to come to an end here soon. And when I say soon, probably the next couple of years. And when that does happen, I think it's been delayed. Originally, they were looking at it last year and kind of slow rolling it now into August of this year, but it does look like we're about to see a BRICS currency that's going to challenge U.S. dollar hegemony. And when that happens, you're going to see a very, very rapid collapse, both in the U.S. political order, but also its ability to defend itself and defend its supposed allies, and also from a power projection perspective. So there's really some fascinating stuff happening right now.
Patrick, this is Keith. Do you see any silver lining in that scenario? You know, it might be nice to go back to the days of the Monroe Doctrine and stop in inserting ourselves in the affairs of Europe and Asia, which, of course, George Washington warned us against in his farewell address. And, you know, there's plenty of commerce for us to, you know, use to have a strong manufacturing base in a good country without, you know, these Jewish neocons, like particularly Victoria Nuland, are responsible for us getting into this mess. And I think that the West as a hegemon is, you know, it's obvious that we're going to lose this war in Ukraine. And hopefully we won't get dragged into a Middle Eastern war with Israel. But, of course, Israel is counting on us getting involved in anything they do. But, you know, we're just – I think the left has finally poisoned the well. They have – you know, they've gone through every possible legitimate civil rights issue that they could on race. And now they're trying to make sexual perversity a civil right, and the rest of the world is just saying, no, that's a bridge too far. We're not following you there. And if buying into transgenderism, for example, is the cost of being part of your club, we'll respectfully decline.
Well, this is what I was saying.
Yeah, I think one of the things.
Go ahead.
Sorry, James.
Go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to cut you off, sir.
Well, I was on the line with Mike Gaddy. I was on his show in the previous hour, and I was just saying, I mean, history just doesn't move in a straight line. Things are cyclical, and you look
That's
at
right.
this gluttonous, criminally corrupt empire, and you just ask, you know, will it be around forever as it currently exists? And I don't think there's any way that that happens with or without our participation. I think it's good. The enemies are going to collapse this thing. Based upon their own actions. I mean, look at this, what we've got going on right now. Another $100 billion on the table because Iran lobbed a few firecrackers that got shot down. $100 billion back on the table.
Our greatest ally that never contributes men or material to any of these wars we fight.
Yeah, our indispensable allies, Ukraine and Israel. I don't know what either of those countries have ever done for us, except leech. But in any event, what do you...
With friends like that, who needs enemies?
Again, this just all goes into it, Patrick. So your comment.
I think you're right. Well, it's interesting. Keith made a good point about the whole idea of this sort of legitimacy, illegitimate civil rights arguments that were happening and who supported what. The bottom line is there really no such thing as a civil right in this regard. This whole racial civil rights thing is a bunch of bunk. And I say that because, you know, when you look at it, well, who's the only one who ever gets disenfranchised from so-called civil rights movements is white people. And there's never any kind of give on anybody else's part. I mean, I couldn't go and say China and all of a sudden say, you know, I want to do this the white way. And how dare you not allow me to do it the white way? Why are you forcing me to do it the Asian way? I couldn't do that in Africa. I couldn't do that in Latin America. I can't do that in the Middle East. And yet any white country is required to bend over and sort of take it with regard to whatever color happens to be occupying their respective space or happens to be in some way sharing it. And so in the past, it's always been part of the reason why you've had these sort of a promotion of civil rights as such from these other countries is because it always came at the expense of white countries, white nations. And that's good for them because they have a certain revenge segment of revenge zeitgeist that exists throughout the rest of the world. The brown world that is not white. And so the
Frank
idea to be able to take down
best.
White countries would be great. Was that?
Yeah,
no, they don't. Yeah.
Franz Fanon also, you know, the black Guyanese French-speaking Marxist from the 30s and 40s said it probably best. He said, the true dream of a slave is not to achieve his freedom, but rather that he and his slave master exchange places.
Yeah. You know what? And that's where we're at right now. And so, I mean, when you have this dynamic playing out, that was finally acceptable to folks because they couldn't wait to do that to happen. The sexual perversion stuff that was being exported largely by a predominantly Jewish leftist Judeo-Bolshevik movement that has grown really deep roots here in the United States, that part is just simply not going to be accepted because there's no benefit to anybody They loved it when you saw, blacks moving in and taking over positions of power that they didn't deserve here in the United States. But they, when you talk about giving transgender children the right to cut off their parts, they're not going to allow that to happen in the Middle East. They're not going to let that happen in Beijing. They're certainly not going to allow that to happen in Africa. So I think there's a difference here where the U.S. is pushed to the point where now they realize it's crazy. They've gotten nuts. And so the rest of the world is rejecting Americanism, where in the past they didn't accept Americanism. They simply supported it. They simply cheered for it because they knew that the strongest white nation in the world was about to come to an end through its own demise, through its own internal struggle, racial struggle, really.
And wherever we went, we had plenty of money to sprinkle on the people. But, the thing about the civil rights movement is that it was an exercise in gaslighting, making vulnerable people feel guilty about something they should feel no guilt about. And it worked. It was basically a large, on a grand scale, exercise in psychological manipulation.
Well, now I want to say this. People might be wondering. This is Confederate History Month. How is this germane? Well, this is how it all adds up. You look at the role, which I think is a very malevolent role that the United States is playing around the world. Get outside of the controlled American media propaganda bubble, and the United States is not seen abroad as our media would like for you to think that it is. Would you agree with that, Patrick?
I would. I think, what's the one thing about, and it's interesting, it's where it all ties into the Confederate history. The United States did a remarkable job at getting the conquered, the vanquished, the South, to feed into the war machine that perpetuated the power of really a Union-dominated yes. United States. And generation after generation after generation, Southerners have proudly flown the American flag over their homes, and they have given their young sons to these wars, and very proudly. Exactly. It is exactly right. This is a janissary. This is a colony of janissaries. Is really what the South has become on behalf of the American Empire, and that American Empire is very much a Union dominated, a Northeastern dominated empire, and I kind of swing D.C. into that role, even though it's south of Mason-Dixon. The issue you have here is the Confederacy has always been a part and a point of pride for Southerners, and it has created a sort of a dual identity among Southerners, one that's both American and one that has a Confederate lineage. They need to destroy that Confederate lineage as best they can, because now the benefits of having what had previously been a kind of a white unification that had occurred in the early portions of the 20th century, that has fallen apart with the civil rights era and the post-1950s civil rights era of America. You now have sort of a left-right dynamic that is really beginning to emerge, to sort of red states versus blue states. And the only way to break that union up, that sort of natural bond between the two parties, or sorry, between the red parties, I should say, is to begin attacking that unique identity that was once Southern. And that is very important because it's a reminder that there was once a time a group of people, the South, who rose up against federal tyranny, and they very nearly won. And this time around, if that were to happen again, I would almost guarantee you they would win. I've been working very extensively, by the way, in a lot of Yankee Northern states. And there is no question in my mind that the South would just wipe these people off the face of the earth if they wanted to. So I think you now have a United States that's terrified, really, of having anybody that might potentially question their power.
And the United States also doesn't do good with guerrilla fighting tactics. Look at Afghanistan, and
right.
Which is what I think a new civil war. Well, I guess the next civil war would be the first actual civil war, perhaps. Although I don't even think
right.
What would we want with Washington? It'd probably be another war for independence or secession. But in any event, what I was going to say was. Also, America's at the end. It really in the twilight. It is just this corrupt gluttonous entity now, and sometimes mm-hmm. those just fall. We saw it with the old Soviet Union. So anyway, to get to this,
we're like powerful Weimar Republic trying to impose Weimar Republic morality on the rest of Europe.
Exactly. Sometimes these sort of empires at this stage of decline just simply collapse. It was a totally different thing in 1861. How does this all germane to what we're talking about this month, this special series that we hold every April? Well, again, look at what the United States is doing abroad. Are they doing more or less to see that World War III becomes a reality? And then, you know, when you think even about U.S. foreign policy outside of all of the geopolitical conflicts that we have that seem to be escalating on more than one front, all right, in the Middle East, in Eastern Europe, and even in Asia. You think about American foreign policy. What are they doing? Trying to get right-thinking African countries to accept transgenderism, which is, of course, mm-hmm. what they're also pushing here. If they're not digging up the very flesh and bones of our ancestors and our heroes. And again, I say, and I said this a little bit earlier tonight on another show I was on. You think they're going to stop with our fabric and our monuments, our flags and our monuments? They will kill you.
Just like the French Revolution.
And so that's what leads us back to the honorable cause. And the purpose of this book was to, if it isn't going to work out, and it never was going to, but if people now are beginning to realize that, we've cited poll after poll after poll, 47% of Republicans for a national divorce here. One out of five believe that the country's on an inescapable path towards violence. 20%, okay? One out of five. So if it isn't going to work out, then you need to seriously consider the topic of secession. Secession doesn't just happen. Even prior to 1861, you had for years and years and years people considering this option, people advocating for it. We don't even have that, and still we're nearing critical mass, which is really phenomenal. You think of all the organized people that were advocating for secession back then, and even without that, we're nearly there in terms of popular opinion. And so that's what this book you put together, Patrick, deals with. The Honorable Cause of Free South. Now, we mentioned Michael Hill. We talked about it with Michael Hill last week. We talked about specifically his chapter. But now the overall theme of this book was to answer questions on our own terms and in our own way about how the South can achieve status as a nation state with a right of self-determination for its people, to retake the narrative related to Southern nationalism and independence. That was the purpose of the book. And as it was written in the promo back last year when it was released, for too long our political and cultural enemies have been able to drive and define that conversation. And this book serves as a vital tool in taking the communication mantle back from those who seek our destruction and ruin. So that's how we're tying all this together with Patrick Martin. We're sort of tapping into his knowledge a man who has worked abroad in the Middle East and in Europe and across the country on how he sees things shaping up for the United States. And now you sort of laid out the vision. We all, each of the other contributing authors, sort of tackled Southern identity from a different perspective. You tied it all together. Remind the audience how you did that and what your prescription was.
Well, yeah, first of all, again, thank you. The Honorable Cause is really an honor in its own right to work with all the different contributors, including yourself, James. The bottom line is this: we need to first begin to identify ourselves and who we are. We need to define ourselves. And that's been a big issue. So for years, because the left has been able to define not just Southern nationalism, it's Southern identity as a whole. I mean, if you think about it, leading out of the late 1980s, Southern identity was somewhat of a positive. I mean, you had Dixie on the Dixie's flag on the top of General Lee. The General Lee was being driven by good guys. You had Doc Holliday, Hollywood, whatever it was called, coming to the South, and even My Cousin Vinny. You had these various movies and television where the South had different. You kind of could make fun a little bit, but at the same time, it was always a good guy. Southerners were the good guys, and something changed dramatically in the 90s and certainly in the 2000s where all of a sudden, Southerners, if you had a bad guy in a movie, you either had a German accent or a Southern accent. And it seems like that has gone that way. And so
exactly
what we need
right.
to do
they
is
also they had that thing in the 60s where the Norman Lear replaced all the Southern-themed TV shows like Beverly Hillbillies and Petticoat Junction with things like All in the Family, and you know, basically tried to promote right. leftism as the American mainstream when it wasn't.
And that's where anyway, I mean, Patrick, you see this kind of war. But going back, yeah, going back to what I was going to say was,
yeah,
we needed to define ourselves. So the purpose of the book, the purpose of writing was, for too long we've kind of been fighting on their grounds. We've been fighting against the removal of monuments. We've been fighting against things of this nature. They've been defining us. Because they run the media, we had to do an end run around the media. We needed to get our own message out to our own people, and that's what the purpose of the book was. And the purpose of trying to promote as many different voices within the Southern dissident community as a whole. That was the first stage of this. Now, as I wrote in the book, it can't stop there. You have to define it, but you have to build the network necessary to make it an actual possibility. That requires a number of different skill sets that need to come to the table. And that's really what I've been doing over the course of the last year. And it's been I've been pretty tired, to be honest, this whole year and moving forward, which is finding the right networks, the financial means to move this vision forward, building the companies, building the infrastructure, building the skill sets, working with allies overseas. That's been a really key component. There are allied voices overseas, especially in Europe, where they themselves see their own identities being destroyed and tampered with. The book itself has opened the door to conversations with members of the Irish dissident community, members of the German dissident community, members of the French and Italian dissident communities, the French community being one of the most well-rounded and probably the most well-organized, them and the Italians, and getting lessons back from them that can be taken back over the course of the next year. Because I do think in 2024, when the Republican loses, I'm still not sure that Trump will actually make it in November, but when the Republican loses, despite all the points to show that he should win the election in November, when that happens, there's going to be a lot of disaffected, deeply discontented members throughout the United States, especially those red states, and more importantly, those southern states, who will finally their eyes will open up and say, the traditional political solution does not exist anymore. It's time to move forward with our own voices, with our own future, and that means Southern secession. And we need to be ready. We need to be organized and prepared to take them in, show them where they can go with their newfound energy, direct that to a positive for their people, and move forward with Southern secession. We have taken for too long. We have been fighting a reactionary struggle for the last 50 years, a reactionary struggle. They take down a monument, we fight back. When they want to have black Marxists march through the streets of Alabama, well, now you've got images of Bull Connor. We continue to put ourselves in positions where we're fighting on their grounds, their terms, their media. Cannot do that. You got to define who you are. You got to create the networks. Those networks have to be strong. They have to come up independently, siloed, so that if one gets taken down, the other face, cut off one finger, the other four exist. You have to create networks that are interconnected, but at the same time can be independent. And once that happens, once you build those networks, once you build that capacity, now you turn around and say, there is a future. And that future has been defined, whether it's defined in the Honorable Cause, whether it's defined in the writings of Identity Dixie, whether it's defined by Dr. Michael Hill in speeches that are often provided out of Wetumpka. It doesn't, where it comes from, whether it's coming out of South Carolina, Travels Rest, people need to know that they're not alone, that this is a much stronger movement than they realize, and this movement is here, and it's real, and it feels your anger, and it feels your pain, and it feels your frustration, and it wants to take that anger, and it wants to take that energy and bring it to something positive, and that positive is a free nation.
Patrick Keith, again.
Well said.
Let me ask you this. How do you see this 2024 election playing out specifically? You know, are they going to steal the election by mail-in ballots again? Are they going to assassinate Trump? What are they going to do to make sure that Trump doesn't win?
All right. I will ask you, Patrick, to ponder that thought as we take this break, and we will come back. And I've got a few words, and we'll certainly get back to that question, and we'll have Patrick answer it. We've got him for one more segment tonight. He's on the road, and we thank him for taking the time to join us. Stay tuned. Patrick Martin.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Tim Berg. House Speaker Mike Johnson is pushing ahead on several bills to aid U.S. allies with a separate bill for the border. The move is angering some conservatives who want to oust him over the move. They argue the border should be tied to Ukraine to force Democrats to vote for its passage. More anti-Israel protests are taking place at New York's Columbia University. Thursday, the NYPD confirmed that 114 arrests were made after the school called police. Former President Donald Trump is not happy about the gag order a judge in his hush money case imposed on him. It bars him from talking about witnesses, jurors, prosecutors, staff, court staff, and their family members. Trump saying on Friday it's his constitutional right to speak and noted others involved in the case are allowed to speak, including star witness Michael Cohen. To which former federal prosecutor Andy McCarthy tells Fox News the former president does have a point.
He's barred from speaking about people who spend basically 24/7 speaking about him.
Israel says it launched a limited strike at several sites in Iran late Thursday night. U.S. officials confirming Israel struck a number of locations inside Iran with no word yet on whether there were any casualties. Several explosions were reported near an airbase of an Iranian city, home to a number of sites linked to Iran's nuclear program. Disaster was narrowly averted at Washington Reagan National Airport on Thursday as air traffic controllers managed to keep a Southwest Airlines plane from colliding with the departing JetBlue plane.
Southwest 2937, stop.
We stopped. We were cleared to cross runway 4.
The FAA is investigating the incident. The JetBlue plane was heading to Boston while the Southwest plane was heading to Orlando. This is USA News.
The inventor and CEO of MyPillow is always looking for ways to solve everyday problems. Have you ever picked up a towel set because it felt really soft in the store, but then when you go to use it, it's not very absorbent? It's basically a towel that's leaving you out to dry. That's why MyPillow has developed the MyPillow towels. Towels that work. I know, it's mind-blowing. Towels that actually dry you. The six-piece towel set includes two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. They come in a variety of colors, and right now you can receive a six-piece set for only $39.98 with promo code USA. Go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the radio listener special. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. To receive this amazing offer on the six-piece set of MyPillow towels, just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special, and enter promo code USA or call 800-951-8175. That's MyPillow.com, promo code USA.
Hey there, TPC family. This is James Edwards, your host of The Political Cesspool. Folks, I want you to subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper. Against all odds, AFP has and continues to publish a populist, independent print newspaper with an unparalleled track record. Founded by a dedicated group of experienced patriots, AFP pulls no punches and tackles the most controversial and pressing issues facing America from an America First perspective. I've worked with the American Free Press since even before the beginning of TPC. Now that's something. You can subscribe to the print edition by visiting AmericanFreePress.net today or simply pick up a handy digital edition subscription. However you do it, subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, by visiting AmericanFreePress.net or by calling 1-888-699-NEWS, AmericanFreePress.net.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
If the Republicans lose their little war, they are voted out in the next election and they return to their homes in New York or Massachusetts or Illinois, fat with their war profits. If we lose our country. We lose our independence. We lose it all.
That again, we always do this time of year, clips from the movie Gods and Generals. Not that we need a movie to prove our point, but it is nice when you can use art to convey the message. That's what we've done with this book, and that was a pretty good movie back in 2003 when it was released. And that again, the great Stephen Lang playing Stonewall Jackson, talking to his adjutant in that scene. We lose it all. They go back rich with their war profits that they lose. If we lose, we lose it all. And we did lose it all. I mean, look at where we are now as a country and as a South. The South is still the moral rudder of the whole thing.
We're still the whipping boy of America.
Well, but we're the only thing that's good about America, really. I mean, generally speaking, there are fantastic people in all the regions, and we have listeners and supporters in every state. But obviously, the South is the heartbeat of whatever is remaining of the faint pulse of whatever
founding would have been stock of America,
considered to be America. But I guess getting back to you, Patrick, would be if I just don't think that question was settled for all eternity in 1865. I think that it will come back. Jefferson Davis said it would, perhaps in a different way and in a different form, but I think you could actually squint and see a future where this whole thing is balkanized and broken up. And God, we better hope so, because I don't see any future for our people. I say this over and over. There is no future for white Christians on this continent. Do you agree, Pat?
But it's going to have to be the Yankees that do the initiating, I think. And I think if Trump got in, that's liable to happen, but I don't think they're going to let Trump get in.
And that was the question before the break. So, Patrick, you can respond to my observations and to Keith's question, however you like.
Well, I think it goes hand in hand. First of all, I always remind folks anytime I'm speaking is that the Irish fought 16 unsuccessful wars before they got the 17th one, where they won their independence from England or the United Kingdom after approximately 700 years of occupation, and yet they eventually won. And the way they won was they took a very slow approach, but one that was very well thought out and methodical, and had a lot of hard work by men whose names will never be remembered. And I think that's something important here that Southern Nationals need. Of course, the speed at which things need to move is a little bit faster now in the internet age, in an age in which things are changing so rapidly. So there's that part. I think the idea really is this. I mean, you have a combination. You have two things that are leading towards a civil war, both of which are bad. The one, and I mean that by, when I say bad, I mean they can get nasty. One is you have a ethno-racial dynamic that exists. Clearly, the white South is under a great deal of assault, whites in general under assault, whether they're in the United States or elsewhere. And you have this happening, but the South is sort of ground zero for Southern, for white resistance. It always has been. So you have this ethno-religious component where we are being attacked. And then you have an ideological one, which can be just as vicious. And that is when, often when you have two different sides, that ideological one is that the original constitutional concepts, ideas, principles really originate and remain in the South. The only region that has consistently voted politically for constitutional ideals has been the South, to include secession, by the way. So the idea that a state has its own ability to secede or break off from a union, that is also uniquely Southern in so many ways, whereas the Yankee states have largely gotten away from the original constitutional ideals, So you have two major train wrecks happening at the same time with the United States, one in which the racial component is there, whites against everybody else. And then you have the second part of that, which is an ideological one, where you have independent-minded individuals versus those who are looking, seeking compelled collectivism. And you have, and this is happening simultaneously. That is unsustainable. And, you know, going to the idea of whether or not Trump will or will not win, I'm not a fan of Trump in general, but I do think that if it was a fair fight, if it was a fair election, I think Trump would definitely win. He'd certainly be the better of the two parties, supposedly, to us. But that said, I don't think that they're going to let anybody win who does not toe the ideological line of compelled collectivism at a minimum and doesn't keep this train rolling towards the elimination of the white race. This is Esau's revenge. This is, and it goes very deep into the Edomite question, the Jewish question. We don't have really a lot of time to get into this, but this is really a revenge component where a blood libel that dates back to at least the destruction of the temple in 770 AD, you now have these people in power that want to see the complete elimination and eradication of Western civilization and the whites to control it, to include those here in the United States.
Let me ask you this very quickly. You mentioned where they're driving the train to, and Keith was talking about Trump's prospects. I think the wretched economy, and I think inflation's, I think it's really at about 30%. This is really unfathomable when you see what the cost of living has gone to in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have a particularly weak president in Biden, and then you've got a terrible economy with all of this inflation. The cost of living has just skyrocketed. People are at their wits' end. That may be enough to get Trump in there. But I think, interestingly, our movement has become so much more stronger since 2020. We have advanced far more under Biden than we did under Trump. And the reasons for that are obvious. Trump's in, people get lazy, Republicans go back to thinking we fixed the system, everything's good now, we won that election. We know better. But in the last 5 years, a lot of people have begun to join our ranks. We've talked about all the different polls and all the different secession movements across mm-hmm. the country, from New Hampshire to Oregon, Texas, you name it. And I think the demographic writing is on the wall. Even if Trump somehow squeaks by, again, a weak president with a terrible economy, the demographic writing is on the wall. It is inevitable that the future will be, because of demographics, you're going to have a stacked Supreme Court with 50 Ketanji Jackson Browns. You're going to have your worst nightmare manifested. And that is where I think our people will thrive. They will, our enemies. There is no reforming this system. There's no winning elections, enough elections to reform this thing. If you're not talking about secession, you're whistling past the graveyard. You ain't whistling Dixie. And I think when our enemies do take control, whether it's this year, and I mean total and permanent control of the union, whether it's this year or in 4 years after Trump is gone, they will drive it into the ditch. And that is what we must wait for. We have to wait for them to make those mistakes.
Yeah. Let me just say this. What they're going to do is they're going to change the law so that peaceful change is impossible. They're going to do things like stack the Supreme Court. They're going to have a nationwide voting law that basically invites electoral fraud when they need it. And all sorts of other things like that. And I think basically when that happens, people will realize there's no way.
Exactly.
That we're
and I think that's our salvation. They're going to criminalize speech. They're going to do all of the things they're doing in Europe. And now, yes, I mean, Ireland has gotten much worse. So, I mean, you could always it's the darkest hour right before dawn or right before the lights go out completely. But, Patrick, you got about a minute left with you. You get the final word on this conversation.
I would say this. For so long, for a number of years, we tried to take over the train, and that didn't work. The train kept rolling towards our people. Then we tried to be another train to go meet them head first. And that clearly didn't work out. We saw what happened in 2017. We tried to build a wall, essentially become the thick wall, so that when their train does collapse into us, we can crash it. And that's not going to work either. This is a pretty powerful train they have. I think we need to work smarter. I think what we need to do is dig a big old ditch. Hell, we want to direct them towards a cliff. Whatever it is we need to do, we need to be able to trick them into the point where they take that train, they drive it as fast and hard as our people as possible, and we step out of the way and let them crash that train on their own. And I think that's what we need to be prepared for, because we are, as a people, need to begin defining ourselves and begin to work harder and stronger and faster towards a conclusion that eventually shows up, because this is going to happen. That train's going to collapse. That train's going to fall. It's going to crash.
I believe it.
And when it does, we need to be the people that say, we have the workable, the viable alternative. And that is found in your state, which is really your country. It's found in your people, the blood of your people, the genetics, the DNA, the very structure of who you are. It's found in God. And here we are ready to give all of that to you through both a message and an organization and a structure that's waiting for you. Come into the fold. Come join us. Become a Southern Nationalist. And let's work to a better future for our people. Our children deserve that. Our grandchildren deserve that. We need to be those people.
Amen and hear, hear.
Yep, I'm afraid that that's the only solution now. We've got to prepare for Trump's defeat and the tyranny that is inevitably going to follow.
Yeah, I think that's just it. I just think that increasingly, as I said, the last 5 years have been very good for us. 4 or 5 years, especially the last 4 years since, well, I guess technically January 2021, Biden's inauguration. People are beginning to get it. Not quite there yet, but they will prove it to us by their actions. Whether it's in what comes immediately after November or 4 years from now, you're not voting yourself out of this. It's time to think about alternative solutions. We did that with the book, The Honorable Cause. Patrick Martin put that together, and he's with us tonight as we continue to celebrate Confederate History Month and talk about the larger issues. Thank you, Patrick.
Hey, hey friends, we'll James Edwards soon. Here again to remind you that Antelope Hill Publishing is America's premier provider of dissident literature. They print books that mainstream publishers are too afraid to touch, providing you with information you need to challenge the status quo. Whether your interests include contemporary dissident politics, history that would otherwise be censored or slandered, philosophy, or exciting and thought-provoking fiction, you'll find plenty to love in the Antelope Hill catalog, which includes books such as Generation 68, The Elite Revolution and Its Legacy, about the elite-driven cultural revolution of the 1960s, which transformed America. Whitey on the Moon, about the demise of the space program due to diversity. The Sword of Christ, which argues for restoring Christianity as the foundation of the West and combating heresies like Christian Zionism. Speeches by Mussolini and other historical figures, and much more. With new titles added every month, there's no doubt that they have something for everyone. So check out their catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Our gallant boys have marched to the rolling of the drum. Shout, shout the battle cry of freedom, and the leaders in charge cry of come, boys, come. Shout, shout the battle cry of freedom. Our Dixie forever, she's never ever lost. Down with the eagle and up with the cross. We will rally round the fighting flag, we'll rally once again.
Well, that's to a listener and supporter in Arkansas who emailed us in this week to request the Battle Cry of Freedom, the Confederate version. And there you have at least a couple of verses from it. That is a fantastic song. You can find it on YouTube. I want to thank Patrick Martin for coming on tonight and give you a preview of what is still to come. Gene Andrews will be back with us in the next hour to talk about one of America's greatest warriors, Nathan Bedford Forrest. We always dedicate an hour, not just, well, the whole month to Confederate history, but always an hour to Forrest and
not just the nation, Tennessean, but the world. You know, he was,
yeah,
he's gotten the attention of military men in Europe and Asia, everywhere, because he was such an intuitive genius.
He really, real life guy, rivaled the legend of mythological gods. That's just, I don't think that's an exaggeration. So we're going to be talking about Nathan Bedford Forrest, Tennessee's favorite son, in the next hour with Gene Andrews. And then in the third hour, Brad Griffin and I went to the movies over the course of the last week, not together, but I went here and he went down there in Alabama where he's at, and we saw the new Civil War movie. And we're going to be offering an on-air review of that, Keith. It's not out on VHS yet, so I know you haven't seen it. But
no, I haven't seen it. I'm not going to pay money to see that. But on the other hand, I looked at it and I said, this is some type of anti-Trump movie. It's got to be.
You wait. Just wait until we get to that. It was all kinds of awful, but also instructive. And so we'll talk about it. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up in the third hour. Now, what was I going to say? Patrick Martin, obviously, great job as always. And, he was talking about, yes, I know what I was going to say. He was talking about an independent South, Southern nationalism. Yes, we're for that. But in the future, if the Balkanization comes, if the ethno-state comes, it won't just be the states of the old Confederacy. I mean, obviously, there are parts of the country that are populated by right-thinking people that didn't exist in 1861. And so you're going to have a lot of the, hypothetically speaking, of course, you're going to have a lot of the Midwest and the Mountain West that would come into this new nation.
Yeah,
and it wouldn't just be the old South. So I don't know if you're going to have a Southern nationalism in that, but you will have, hopefully, God willing, a Balkanization in a country within a country.
Well, something that I've pointed out for years on this is that there's a reason why the cowboys in all the old movies used to have Southern accents, and that's because a lot of the West, particularly the Mountain West and everything except for the coastal regions on the left coast, were populated by a lot of refugees, Southern refugees from the Reconstruction. The harshness of Reconstruction was such that a lot of Southerners who did not have means anymore went out west to try to escape the yoke of Reconstruction, and they brought their values with them, and that's why most of that area out there is Red State America.
Now, I want to read something to you, Keith, and then I want to ask you what in the hell happened, all right? But first, before I do, I want to remind people, we're going to be talking about Jefferson Davis here for the last 5 minutes of this hour. You know, of course, one of the very first things we ever did as a program is we helped organize support for Beauvoir, which is the Jefferson Davis home in Biloxi, Mississippi. That's where he spent his post-war years. It was partially destroyed by Hurricane Katrina in 2005, and we were able to raise some money for it. One of the first organized efforts we did with this radio program was to help raise money for Beauvoir's restoration. And in return, of course, we were given several hundred fragments of the original slate roof, which had been imported from Wales during the original construction of the home.
I still got mine.
Yes, and over the years, I think twice now, we used these pieces as fundraising incentives, and listeners around the world now, all the way down into South America and Europe and beyond, have them proudly showcased in their homes, and that's something I'm very proud about. But when Jefferson Davis died, President Davis, it was the largest funeral the South had ever seen. There was a funeral procession in New Orleans, on December 11th, 1889, and an astonished North looked on in amazement. And I'm going to read a little bit about this, and then I'm going to tell you what newspapers in New York wrote about Jefferson Davis at the time. But first, in late November 1889, Jefferson Davis boarded a train at Beauvoir Station in Biloxi, bound for New Orleans. In New Orleans, he purchased a ticket on the steamer Natchez, of course, intending to travel to his plantation Briarfield, south of Vicksburg, and settle the accounts with his overseer. The weather turned cold and rainy, and President Davis became ill and feverish and developed bronchitis. He was unable to leave Briarfield and return home for several days, but on that last day, kind hands helped him as he made his way through the broad middle hall of Briarfield to the porch, then descended the steps to the carriage, which was waiting to take him to the landing. As he looked out, he saw the remnants of the white cotton were still in the fields he had cleared so long ago. The overseer's 10-year-old daughter timidly approached him and asked him if he would please write in her memory book. Unable to disappoint a child, he wrote, quote, "May all your paths be peaceful and pleasant, charged with the best fruit, the doing good to others," end quote. In New Orleans, the boat was met by prominent doctors and four by Tulane medical students waiting to take him to the home of a friend. After lingering for several days, President Jefferson Davis died on December 6, 1889. Newspapers, even in the North, paid tribute to him as his body lay in City Hall, and thousands of people passed by to pay their respects. In an editorial, the editor of the New York World, obviously now a defunct newspaper, wrote this, quote, "He was a man of commanding ability, spotless integrity, and controlling conscience. He was proud, sensitive, and honorable in all of his dealings and in every relation of life. A great soul has passed." That's how one New York newspaper remembered President Jefferson Davis of the Confederate States of America. But how about the New York Times? Yes, that New York Times wrote this.
This is before Jewish ownership, of course.
"The South loves his memory as it should love it, and as the people of every patriotic country should and ever will respect it. Were the people of the South to forget him or fail to honor the man who so endured so patiently for their sake, they should deserve no respect or place in the minds of men." That's what the New York Times wrote about Jefferson Davis and how his memory should be kept for all time in 1889. What happened?
Well, back then, the North, or at least the movers and shakers in the North, knew that they had owed a debt of gratitude to people like Lee and Jefferson Davis, because we didn't have an equivalent of William Tecumseh Sherman. We didn't burn down their towns and lay waste to their crops and try to starve them out. If we had fought the war like that, then I don't think they would have been saying what they did. But basically, we fought a gentleman's war. There was only one northern town that was put to the torch by Confederate troops. That was Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, in the run-up to Gettysburg, and that was to protest Sherman's march to the sea.
And you're making a good point, Keith, but I think the bigger point is this. The journalist of the actual time of the war between the states, this is what they wrote about him. The people who would have seen it firsthand and known it best. And not only that.
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make.
The biggest adversaries, even Sherman, all of these people wrote that Forrest was, you know, a man worthy of respect. Even the enemies that he fought on the very battlefield exonerated him and then went on to honor him. Well, the people who fought the war against them respected them. The newspapers who wanted to see their demise still respected them. But see, the people today, 160 years later, know better than the people who were actually there, who actually fought them, who were actually writing in newspapers at the time.
These people knew that if there had been people in the South like Sherman running affairs, that there would have been a much worse legacy in their minds than it was because of people like Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee.
How can people now living over 160 years later think that they know these men better than the people who were there?
Well, that's because they've put another group of, there's a new sheriff in town and he's black, okay? And basically, blacks just have a sense of revenge. Like we said in the last segment with Patrick, Franz Fanon, the black Marxist from French Guiana, said it best. He said, "The true wish and dream of the slave is not to achieve his freedom, but rather that he and his slave master exchange places." When they do things like tear down Southern monuments, they're letting you know, we're the new sheriff in town. We're in charge of everything. We're going to take down any remembrance that you were once in charge. This is a brave new world, and we're in charge of it. See, that's what they're trying to do. And, you know, what is happening in that brave new world, and particularly here in Memphis, we know, you know, Memphis was the unofficial capital of the Delta, and as a result, we have a lot of blacks around here. They've taken control of our government, and this is what they're doing. They're basically, but what we're also seeing is that they are totally incapable of managing a city up at first world standards.
Yeah, I just have to say again, to drive this point home, the next time you see the New York Times disparaging the South or any newspaper, say that's not what the New York Times said at the time of President Davis's death. The next time you hear some Antifa guy call your Southern ancestors a traitor, say that's not what Sherman called them.
No, you know,
the biggest enemies never called them that.
Well, they appreciated the fact that we didn't visit on them the hell that they visited on us.
No, I think it was more than that. I just think they were at least that honest. They were at least that honest to say these were men of honor and we respect them as warriors. I mean, the whole thing, even with Sherman, I mean, he's burning in hell with Grant, but Grant, you know, wouldn't let his soldiers mock Lee at Appomattox. But again, Antifa dweebs today with a third grade history education from a public school. They know better than the people at the time. That's the point. All right, we got to take a break. We're back with Gene Andrews to talk about that great American, Nathan Bedford Forrest.